Welcome to Mind Food Radio, Smart Thinking with Michael McHugh and Ben Starr.
And welcome to another fabulous episode of Mind Food Radio's Smart Thinking. Coming up on today's program, well, it's all about health, folks. We've got lots of great health interviews for you, and we're going to be hearing from Dr. Brian Mitchell and Evan Mitchell, their father and son, in the next few minutes, talking about a very, very interesting topic, which will keep as a bit of a surprise for you. We've also got, coming on today's program, Dr. Janet Randall talking with us, Jacqueline Hellier, our sex therapist, standing by, not too far away, and a little later on today's program, we'll also be chatting with David Welsh, and talking about some winter walks that you can do as well. And don't forget, you can also go on to mindfood.com and go into the draw to win some fabulous prizes. Today, it's all about health on Mind Food Radio, Smart Thinking.
Mind Food Magazine and Mind Food Radio. Together, Smart Thinking.
Well, we're back, and I tell you what, when I look at relationships, Michael, reading through this, most relationships fail. It's hard to get a clear fix on relationships. They're intrinsically messy, but the place to start is with one clear understanding that most relationships fail.
God,
I'm feeling cheered up.
I'm leaving now.
I'm out of mine.
I tell you what, this is a really interesting segment, though, because we do a lot of psychology stories in Mind Food, and this is a little bit different because we're joined today by Dr. Brian Mitchell, who's got a PhD in psychology, and his son Evan, who has a BA honours. In fact, a very bright family. Can you imagine if you landed in that family?
We're amongst good company.
I know. Welcome to the show, boys.
Indeed.
Wonderful to be here.
So why do relationships fail?
Well, we say most relationships fail. It's not inevitable that all relationships should fail, but the thrust of the app, Love Me, Love Me Not Couples, is that negotiation is the most important thing in romantic relationships. Now, most people would say love, and love is obviously extremely important, but as the app points out, love is not all you need.
But surely in a relationship, there's always one that's perhaps a little more dominant and probably has the art of negotiation down pat more than the other.
Are you self-projecting here, Michael?
I'll just lie down on the couch.
Michael, that's not necessarily a disadvantage to the partner.
Oh, really?
No, not at all. In fact, when people sit down to discuss things, old habits often take over, and it's very difficult to get absolute equality between people, and someone who is used to getting their own way will subtly or not so subtly try to do it again. But there are ways you can handle that form of subtle bullying and other forms of psychological pressure.
I'd just add one thing there, Brian, as well. Leaving aside power disparity in relationships, when couples are genuinely negotiating, they are genuinely parleying as equals. It can't be any other way. It's when people attempt to address their conflicts by anything other than negotiation that power disparity really starts to get out of control and escalate those conflicts.
I'm interested to know, though, that, you know, if you're in a relationship, I think one of the big things that you go through in a relationship is, say, if you're with a partner, doing your wills and stuff like that. That can be quite confronting.
The reason why that can be tricky is that claims can come apparently out of left field.
Yes.
And the reason for that is that things that have hitherto been left unsaid are now getting an airing. And whenever that happens, particularly between two people who are in love with one another,
yep,
it leads to tempers rising, and human nature makes that almost a sure bet.
Yeah.
So we address that whole issue of the emotional side in our app with a series of temper cooling rules. If you're negotiating with a partner, and bear in mind, the principle is that it only takes one partner to know how to negotiate properly for both of them to benefit.
Yeah.
And it's that partner who follows those rules, keeps down the heat.
I think it,
perceptions. If they think it is, then it is.
Yeah. Because what it gets down to is your self-worth in the your worth in the relationship, doesn't it?
And your partner's worth.
Yeah.
Brian and Evan, where can our listeners buy the Love Me, Love Me Not Couples app?
They can get it on the App Store.
I'm downloading as we speak.
well, that's great to hear.
It is as well to put Love Me, Love Me Not Couples in. Otherwise, it could become a longer process.
Right,
Love Me,
okay.
Love Me Not Couples will go straight to the app.
And what people can also download is for free is a companion ebook to the app, which is Why Relationships Fail Inside Couples and Your Dramas, and that's available on the iTunes for iBooks as a free download. It's also on Amazon for 99 cents.
Great stuff, Brian and Evan Mitchell. Thank you very much.
Thanks, guys.
Guys, it was an absolute pleasure.
Mind Food Radio, smart thinking, the perfect gift idea is a Mind Food magazine subscription. Visit mindfood.com today.
Okay, Michael, on the program today, Dr. Danielle Stelvass is joining us. Now, you know, almost one in three people search the internet for information, I'm guilty of this, about their symptoms before they visit their doctor. New research from the NPS is all telling us about this.
Well, I told you it was only a common cold, and yet you thought you were dying.
Now you tell me.
But the thing is, we all do it, don't we? We all go to the Google machine and tap in what we think we're dying.
I read it and then I go, I can't read it. I don't want to know. I just don't want to know.
Welcome to the show, Dr. Danielle.
Hello, gentlemen.
So tell us, how common is this?
Look, we find some recent NPS research into this area has found about a third of people with a 1 in 3 report they will check the internet for their symptoms before they go and see their health professional. And I guess the important thing about that is you can't always believe what you read.
Are girls worse than boys?
Oh, look, there is some gender difference, yes. More girls will look at that kind of information, particularly mothers with so many mother sites. But there's probably more of an age difference than a gender difference. So we find that more younger people who are obviously perhaps more IT savvy, but also the old people in that idea that the doctor knows best and knows all, feel a little bit that it's disrespectful or something. They don't want to look like they're questioning the doctor, which of course is not the case.
But don't you think a doctor, you know, who has studied for many, many years and has all that experience under their belt, and when you're not feeling that well, that's what you're paying for. You're paying for that expert, and it's all very well you can go on a Google, but you are not a professional. You don't really know perhaps what you're looking for.
Well, that's right. So there's a couple of different factors in that. The first thing you mentioned about was the quality of the information source. And if you're not feeling well, you may not be able to see, is this information being given to me by somebody who wants to sell something? Is it about hype or trying to get commercial gain on that? Or is the information old? Was it poorly conducted? But the important thing you mentioned about taking it to the health professional who can tailor it about you. So they're taking that information and saying, in this case of Ben or Michael, this is the situation for that individual. You're not actually dying. You do have a cold.
But you know what's scary? What about people that do self-diagnose and then don't go to the doctor?
Well, look, that is a possibility as well. So what we're saying to people then is be able to assess the information. Find something like nps.org.au. We're an independent organisation, not for profit, and we're funded by government to provide independent information. Put that in your favourites, and then you know that anything from that site will lead you to reliable information.
So this is a relatively new issue, though, isn't it, in society? You know, 10, 20 years ago, we never really had this problem where we were self-diagnosing probably as much as we can. Where does it all lead to? You know, do you see a decline, I guess, in people going to the doctor?
Well, no. We're actually hoping that what we see is an improvement in health literacy. We're hoping that people will then start to understand the importance of their health and know the questions to ask, know the information sources to go to, and then know the role of their health professional is about tailoring that information for them. And then, of course, there'll be some people who don't have capability or capacity to be able to look at things like the internet. So we're hoping it's for the good in the long run, but you still have an important role for your health professional.
Do you think it's good, though, that people know more about their body by doing this type of research than opposed to the old days where you'd go to the doctor and the doctor would tell you what's wrong with you?
Well, look, there is certainly a role. The doctors, as you say, are trained to have this specific expertise. But you know your body as well. So what we want is the consumers to know the right information for them and know how to ask the right information as well. So that's about the health literacy. The other thing that's interesting is we pay more attention to what's in our cereal boxes than we do to what's in our medicines. So we're getting people to realise that medicines do have strong effects, that can be good and bad, and it's really important that you understand them and what that means in your case as well.
Yeah. I tell you what, Ben will be running to that medicine cabinet.
I'm actually getting the Kellogg's now. Thanks, Dr. Danielle.
Hey, thanks. That's interesting. Thanks a lot.
Thanks, guys.
And we love Dr. Jeanette Randell.
Hi, thanks for having me.
You know, I guess the importance of antibiotics, but what do you think about a flu jab?
I have a flu jab every year. I jab my kids every year. I don't want to lose 2 weeks from the flu. So, yeah, I have one every year.
You know, it's funny, since I've been having the flu jab, I have not had a chest infection for 4 years.
Is there a big growth in that in terms of the winter jabs, you know, the flu jabs, Dr. Jenner?
There's a government program that targets everyone over the age of 65, so that age group is very well covered by flu vaccination now. And in the last couple of years, since that really nasty flu epidemic a couple of years ago, we've also been able to give free flu shots to anyone with chronic illness. Mm. So we're certainly covering a lot more of the population, but... And I think because we're doing a lot more flu vaccinations now, we're just promoting it to all of our patients. Mm. And, you know, if you're working and you've got kids in school, you really don't want to be losing those 2 weeks.
Now, Ben, that won't cover your hypochondria, but...
That's another segment in itself. So what are we looking out for this year? What's on the radar?
We're not expecting it to be a bad flu season, but every year, of course, everybody gets the usual coughs and colds. Mm. You know, little kids with the ear infections and the sore throats, and you know, adults with the common cold. So I guess in general practice what we see is lots of people coming through the door with these respiratory illnesses, really looking for advice and help, and a lot of the time looking for antibiotic prescriptions.
But with the antibiotic prescriptions, you know, a lot of people don't finish them, do they? You know, as soon as the first signs of them getting well, they kind of stop. Now, how important is it to complete the entire course?
It's really important, and in fact, we're giving too many antibiotics out in Australia compared to a lot of the overseas countries. We're still prescribing too many antibiotics. So at NPS, we're very keen to encourage both doctors and patients, you know, not to reach for an antibiotic at the first sign of a cold. A lot of these illnesses are viral, probably 80 to 90% in fact are viral, and antibiotics are not going to make one scrap of difference.
You know,
every time we take an antibiotic, the bugs get a little bit smarter the next time round. So we're seeing this issue of antibiotic resistance in the community. We're using too many antibiotics means that when we really need them, they actually don't work.
Now, apart from a flu jab, you know, at the start of the season, what else can we be doing to kind of make sure we don't catch the colds and flus of winter?
Well, at an individual level, it's about staying healthy, obviously. So eating healthy food and getting enough fluids and, you know, not getting too run down or stressed, that's really important.
And back to exercise.
Yes, obviously exercising, but, you know, avoiding large groups of people. So in Brisbane, every year, the GPs, we dread exhibition time. It's in August, and we see a huge spike in numbers for the 2 weeks after the exhibition.
Is that right?
Wow.
Absolutely. We just dread it. And
that's the Easter show off my list.
What happens if you're hopping on a plane?
Yes, planes, anywhere where you're in close confines with people.
Hey, listen, Dr. Jeanette, thank you very much. As always, it's a pleasure to have you on the show.
Lovely. Bye.
Mind Food Radio, Smart Thinking with Michael McHugh and Ben Starr.
This is an interesting interview, Michael. We've got Jacqueline with us on the line. Helia.
Yes.
And it's all about intimacy.
That's right. And Jacqueline is a sex therapist. And let's be honest, and we should tell our listeners, we've actually been giggling here like a couple of schoolboys going, we've got sex therapists online. But I've got to tell you, whenever we've done a story with Jacqueline or anything like that, it becomes one of our highest rating hits. So I'm really looking forward to this interview. Welcome to the show, Jacqueline.
Hi, how are you?
Good. Now, today we're going to be talking about intimacy.
Yes.
Michael, you're blushing.
I haven't even said the sex yet in his
blushing. I know, blushing.
It's pathetic, isn't it?
Yeah.
But listen, how big an issue is this for couples in a relationship?
It's huge. I mean, intimacy is so vital to you as a couple. And if we look at what a relationship requires, it's like the three pillars. And one's companionship, sure, being friends. Another is being able to run, you know, to manage life together, the logistics and so forth. And the third one is intimacy, passion, love, sex, love and intimacy.
Yeah.
It's that differentiates your relationship from any other relationship.
Why do people, you know, in their relationships, they break down? Is it because of the sexual stuff? The intimacy is lost?
Yeah, it's very, very common. I mean, sex and money are the two main reasons why relationships end.
Yeah.
You know, for some reason, we seem to think that this one part of life, unlike all others, should just happen naturally and be easy. You know, like no one thinks you get wealthy without effort. No one thinks you stay healthy without effort. Yet for some reason we think we should just like naturally have an easy, uncomplicated, intimate life.
Do you think, though, this is part of society, though, you know, that we don't I don't know, perhaps educate our kids at school, or we don't talk about it, just generally that.
Absolutely. I mean, I am very, very rare. There's virtually no one out there that actually teaches people this stuff. Mm. You get a lot of very, okay, at school you don't get sex education, you get reproduction education. You learn how to make babies and not make babies. And that's it. Nothing about love, intimacy, pleasure. Oh, no.
Well, because do you think that then falls into the realm of duty of care?
Oh, well, look, I mean, one of the problems that I see, because we don't give our young people proper sex education, you know, intimacy and pleasure education, they have to find it somewhere. So, you know, like, when we were young, there wasn't the internet, so we didn't know very much, but we had to basically go off and figure it out ourselves, right?
Yeah.
Some more successfully than others. What's happening these days, the kids aren't getting the education or the information that they need, so they turn to the internet, right? And on the internet, now I have nothing against porn per se, except that these days it's all that's available to educate people, right? Mm,
that's sad, isn't it?
Everyone's looking at porn and thinking that's what sex is, and it's not.
Mm.
It's
but how do we change that?
Well, yeah, that is a real challenge because, you know, I mean, from my point of view, one of the things that I say to couples right at the beginning is spend a little bit of quality time together every day.
Yeah.
Right? You'd be amazed at how many people don't even spend 15 minutes just having a nice chat.
Yeah.
You know, I say sit down with a cup of tea, maybe when the kids have gone to bed, for instance, yeah? Or at some stage, make a cup of tea, sit down somewhere nice, maybe play the backgammon or whatever, and just have a chat.
Yeah.
You know, and start to remember why you liked this person in the first place.
But what happens when the chat's no longer there?
You may need to start, you know, doing things again that have commonality. Because, I mean, if you did marry someone for no reason other than you thought they were hot, well, that's pretty dumb. You know, like I said, there were three pillars, and one of them is friendship. You know, like you do need to have interests in common. And it is true that people can grow apart.
Yeah.
You know, like relationships can come to an end, and hopefully you can maturely say, look, it's been great, but we're not meant to be together anymore.
Well, unfortunately, in the words of Sarah Brightman, it's time to say goodbye.
Jacqueline, we could talk for hours. We're going to have to get you back on because there's so much we can talk about. But thank you very much for coming on the show today. For more information on Jacqueline and her book and site, go on to mindfood.com.
This is Mind Food Radio, smart thinking.
I love segments like this for people that have hypochondria like me, as you would say, Michael. No, I'm only joking. We're talking about brain health. It's very important in today's world.
It is. And as you know, it's the most vital organ.
I didn't know that, but I now do know that. I thought your heart was. We've got a psychologist, brain health and thinking, lovely Dr. Lee Hodder's joining us. How are you, Doctor?
I'm well, thank you.
Now, you've worked up a series of workshops, haven't you, in and around brain health?
Yes, I have, and also thinking styles, because we need to get out of the rut of how we normally think.
And it's interesting, some of the guests we've had on Mind Food Radio, you know, they've talked about, you know, what happens in your 20s and your 30s and 40s, but they've all said as we get older, the mind is the most important thing that we should really focus on in terms of, you know, general intelligence and development. For Mind Food, that's what we're all about in terms of smart thinking. Tell us a little bit about the brain health that you specialise in.
What I've discovered is a very scary statistic, is that by 2050, there's going to be a 254% increase in degenerative brain diseases in Australia. And it's primarily because we have an ageing population and also because of our current lifestyle. So given that the brain is the most vital organ in the body, and without it, we basically will fall to the ground and not be doing too much. Mm. I decided to come up with a workshop to improve people's brain health.
We're seeing a lot more of anxiety and depression and stuff like that coming through these days. Is that a sort of prerequisite to what the future is going to be like?
Yes, they say that depression will certainly be on the increase over the next few years, as will things such as Alzheimer's and senile dementia.
You're kind of at the other end of that, though, aren't you? You're sort of trying to help people before perhaps they slip into that depression or have those
Absolutely. No, my workshops are aimed to reduce the likelihood of those sorts of brain diseases occurring.
Tell me about, in terms of our brain, what are some things that we can do to make our brain more healthy?
Oh, there's lots of things. We can eat all the foods that we're supposed to eat for a healthy body. The brain loves potassium, which you find in bananas. It needs the omega-3 fatty acids, which, of course, fish is traditionally called brain food.
Mm-hmm.
It also needs carbohydrates. So to all those people who are on the low-carbohydrate, high-protein diet,
yep.
I wonder why they're thinking fuzzy. That would be why. It needs oxygen, plenty of it. So for all those people who smoke, they need to stop.
Mm-hmm.
We need a lot of water. The brain's very fluid. And it's a terrible term, but it slops around in the brain pan. And it, if we lose as much as, or as little, sorry, as 1% of our body fluid,
yep.
our brain actually starts shrinking, and that's why we get fuzzy thinking and headaches.
There are three little things we can do. How important is exercise? We talk to a lot of doctors here, and they say exercise is a key, another area for your brain.
Very much so. Physical exercise, which, of course, is going to increase your oxygen to your brain, and also mental exercise in the form of doing crosswords or Sudoku or learning a new language or just doing something different.
And sleep is so important, isn't it?
Oh, very much so.
From your point of view, Dr. Lee, what are some sleep techniques that we can be really doing to help our brain just stop and switch off?
Okay. We need to understand that sleep comes in 90-minute waves. So if you miss one, get up and do something really, really boring. And then when you feel that next sleep wave coming on, if you're an insomniac, try and catch that one in. We need to understand that watching TV and playing with your computer till late at night, all that does is signal the brain that it's time to be awake.
Dr. Lee Hodder, thank you very much for your insights in terms of brain and its potential, and thanks for being on today's show.
My absolute pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Mind Food Magazine and Mind Food Radio. Together, smart thinking.
Now time on Mind Food Radio to talk about a topic about affection. Dr. Michelle Garnett joins us, and this is a very interesting interview, how we can help assist kids with Asperger's syndrome to understand and express affection.
Welcome to the show, Dr. Michelle. How are you?
Hello. Well, happy to be here. Thank you.
I love the name of your project. The Affection Project. It doesn't get much better than that, does it?
No, I love the name of it as well. And it is apt because the whole project, what we do with the kids, is all about expressing affection, whether that be with our family members or our friends. There's a lot to learn within that topic.
There sure is. Now, the clinic was actually born through, I guess, you know, your passion for understanding autism.
Yes.
And a strong desire, I guess, to be part of a positive change for people who, you know, perhaps have that within their families.
That's
How
right.
difficult has that been in terms of working with families and letting them understand, I guess, that world of autism?
Unfortunately, for families who have a child with Asperger's syndrome, there's been little help around. There's been little understanding, unfortunately.
Mm.
And there's been often a long road toward appropriate and accurate diagnosis and then the proper interventions and assistance that follows.
Years ago, people wouldn't have been diagnosed with these types of things. Is it because there's more diagnosis that, you know, we're seeing a lot more of this? Because was it around a long time before?
Absolutely. This is a part of the brain that's fascinating. We have brains that are very social brains. They do social really well, the small talk, they're getting along with each other. And then we have brains that are much better. They're wired for information and facts. And our Aspies have always been here, but they've been discovering things and contributing to facts and knowledge. But certainly it's always been part of brain difference. We're now beginning to understand brain difference at much finer levels of analysis. And one of those is the social brain and how important it is.
Now, also part of it in terms of that understanding, I guess, is the, how to express affection. And in that, I guess, the power of a hug, isn't it? And how healing or harming that is.
Yeah. And it's difficult, I think, for us to perceive of a hug as being harmful. And yet, we know that for many who are on the autism spectrum, a hug, it can be an overwhelming tidal wave of sensation which can send them further into experiencing uncomfortable emotions like anxiety, stress, and sometimes anger. So at a neurotypical, someone who doesn't have autism will think that a hug is bound to help. You know, you always feel better after a hug. It fixes the feeling. But if we apply that logic or that inner knowing from our social brain to someone on the autism spectrum, we could actually be, as I say, chugging them straight through into a more powerful, extreme negative emotion, and that's not helpful.
Mm. Do adults get diagnosed later in life?
Yes, yeah, certainly. Many adults that we see at Minds and Hearts are coming to the diagnosis later, and that's just because of what you were talking about before. We didn't have the knowledge earlier about Asperger's syndrome to diagnose them when they were younger. But with more knowledge now, there's a literature base, there's more movies, TV shows coming out with characters with Asperger's syndrome in them, and people are relating to it and realizing, wow, that sounds like me. I need to find out. And often they describe then that they have the missing piece to the puzzle. They understand themselves better. It's often a pathway to a greater self-acceptance and a sense of well-being about who they are.
Dr. Michelle Garnett, it's great to have you on the show. As I said right at the start, a perfect name, The Affection Project. I just love it. I think fantastic. What you're doing is brilliant.
Thank you.
And, for more details, go to mindfood.com.
Thank you. That was lovely to talk to you. Great to talk about this topic.
Yeah. Good on you. You're doing great work.
Thank you.
Well, I got a bit of a shock today, ladies and gentlemen. Michael walks in wearing bright colours and he goes, hey, I've got my mojo back.
That is so corny. I can't. That should really
That's
be deleted.
That's more me, actually.
Yeah, exactly.
I love mojo. How do we get it?
Well, on the show today, we've got Dr. Ginny Mansberg, who is the author of How to Get Your Mojo Back. And Ginny, welcome to the show.
Thanks so much for having me, guys.
The only thing I'm a bit concerned is the next line is, every woman is too busy to stop. What about us blokes?
True. You know what? I reckon there's something in this for every bloke.
Right.
It's just that, come and sit in my surgery and there's like a bit of a dearth of blokes around. It's just all girls. So I wrote this for most of my patients. But you know what? You guys, come on board.
Yeah. And you know what? I think book two has got to be what every bloke is, you know, too busy to stop.
Do women lose their mojo?
Yeah. You know what? They've all got it in their 20s.
Yeah.
And somewhere between starting full-time work, having the first kid, and then by the time they've had the second one, they're absolutely on the floor. I sit here in my surgery, and then I just watch their mojo, their spark, their enjoyment of life just sap out of them gradually. And given that, you know, while they come to see me as a GP with a cough, a cold, a sore leg, a sore hip, but what's really going on is they're actually quite worried about how awful and how old they feel. I thought this book was really important to help women just reclaim their vitality, reclaim their youth that they deserve.
Mm.
But isn't it just tiredness?
No, it's so much more than that. You know, I agree with you. I think tiredness is a huge part of it, but it's stress. It's not handling your stress properly and the impact that has on all of your relationships and your performance at work.
Mm.
But also, like, your spark in the bedroom, your ability to, you know, stop putting on weight, it's all of that stuff rolled into one, and your immune system going propo as well.
It's kind of interesting though, because you know, that phase of life that you have described, everyone goes through that, don't they? And yet probably as society, we're not that kind to each other around that phase, do you think?
I think that's right. You know, we put so much effort into the people around us, trying so hard to make sure that they're okay.
Mm.
And guys, I'm sorry to tell you, but I really do think it's women who don't put themselves first. You know, they are amazing friends, amazing partners, incredibly sacrificing and giving daughters and mothers. But when it comes to putting the energy into themselves, they feel too guilty somehow to do it.
Mm.
But what they don't get is, you know how when you get on the aeroplane and they say, you know, if the oxygen mask falls, fit yourself first and then look after those around you. Because the aeroplanes have worked out that if mum falls over, like the kids are goners anyway, women don't really get that.
Yeah, the husbands should be putting it on first, probably.
Yeah, well, I mean, the guys get it. It's not that they're selfish. It's just that they've worked it out pretty clearly that if they come home from work absolutely exhausted and the kids are screaming and they don't just take the time to go to the toilet and have a drink if they need it, that they're actually not going to be much good for anyone. But somehow women don't. And I think part of it as well is we are a little bit of the martyr. You know, like we sometimes really love stressing out and being really worn out. We wear it as a badge of honour, whereas blokes are like, nah. And you beat yourself up about it.
Yeah.
And instead of stopping to smell the coffee, it just all becomes this great big huge thing of stress. And look, don't forget, the financial situation in Australia is difficult at the moment.
Yeah.
People are, you know, that people are very worried about their jobs. And work has become I think, far more stressful. Even in the last 12 months, I've noticed in my surgery how much more freaked out by work people are.
I think it's sad, though, in today's world that mums don't get to be mums anymore. I mean, you know...
I'm going to be honest with you, and I love my kids. I love them to death. Mm. But if I had to be a stay-at-home mum, I'd be really, really unhappy. I'd be far more stressed doing that because I wouldn't find it as satisfying.
Yeah.
I love going to work, but we need to find a way that you can go to work and feel fulfilled in your career, not living through your children, but that also doesn't make you feel like you've just been run over a truck by a truck 24/7.
Very interesting. Well, Dr. Jeannie Mensberg, thank you very much for joining us today on the program.
Thanks for having me on,
guys.
Nice
to have you. Yes, and the author of a brand new book too called How to Get Your Mojo Back. And of course, for more details, go on to mindfood.com.
Mind Food Radio, smart thinking with Michael McHugh and Ben Starr.
Exercise is the key to happiness.
Oh,
all our doctors
it.
And psychologists talk about it.
Can't get enough of it. I tell you what, I am finding it very hard though in the wet weather to get out there and get fit. What about you?
Do you walk around with an umbrella when you're doing your walks around the park there? Or
no, I just wear a hooded top that's waterproof.
Yeah.
And it hasn't stopped me.
David Welsh is with us now.
Our personal trainer. How are you, David?
Very, very well, you guys. And yourself?
Yeah, good, mate.
Now, is this a quiet time of the year for you or just as busy being winter?
Funnily enough, for a lot of my clients, it's the time that I really try and push them to really focus more on their exercise because it's the time that most people have a tendency to gain the most weight.
And why is that?
For the simple fact that, you know, who really wants to eat a cold salad in the middle of winter? We look for warmer foods, heavier foods, and comfort foods. So this is where I generally get a lot of my clients to really try and knuckle down and focus on their training and really be aware of what they're putting into their mouth.
Hey, tell me, a lot of your clients that come in, you're talking about comfort foods. How many of them do you reckon would be, you know, suffering a lot from stress in just everyday life?
Oh, listen, I would say close to... probably 95 to even almost 100% of my clients go through stress. There's all different types of stress. I deal with my mothers who deal with the daily grind of being a mother, and juggling kids, getting them to school on time, getting them to activities on time, and then weekend activities, and then trying to find time for themselves. I deal with the dads that have the financial burden of making sure that, you know, everything can run smoothly so that I get the opportunity to train their wives.
Now, how do you get fit when it's raining and wet?
So what do we do while it's with all this rain?
Well, at the moment, for a lot of my clients, you know, it's some that, for example, live in apartments. One of the easiest things I say is, how many stairs do you have in the apartment?
Yeah.
And you can start walking just up and down the stairs, even just to keep things going. You can time it as well. You can think, okay, how fast did it take me to get up those flight of stairs, walk back down nice and slowly, and then go back up again. If you can aim to do that, you know, maybe 10 or 15 laps, trust me, that will be a good, solid workout in itself.
Yeah, that is good advice. And what about if you don't live in an apartment?
If you don't live in an apartment, then the other thing we can always look for is what you might have in the house. You can just simply look for a little pantry full of food. What we could do with the pantry is we could turn around and put our hands on it and turn around and do some tricep dips, for example.
Michael has the fittest right arm from opening that door in that pantry.
That sounds rude.
No.
What about a couch and a TV in front of it?
And his left hand with the remote?
Yeah. Yes. So we just got to balance it and put the DVD control on the other side so we've got two things that he can lift up at the same time.
He's gardening. You know, he's trying to do everything at the minute.
But, you know, it can be as simple as just doing some, you know, a nice little circuit. You can be doing it in the middle of your lounge room, like just doing some squats and some push-ups and some planks and some crunches, all sorts of things just to keep you moving until you can get yourself back outdoors and hopefully experience the type of workout that you generally like to do.
Is walking in the rain bad for you?
As long as you're covered from head to toe and you're going to stay nice and warm, it's not ideal. There are definitely other things that, you know, I would suggest, but walking is still a form of exercise. But I would suggest to not walk in the rain if possible.
Well, we had a doctor on a couple of weeks ago, and he was all about brain health and things like that. He was fascinating, and he said how he gets fit is that he bought an exercycle and put it in front of the TV and actually watched DVDs that he really liked. So the focus actually wasn't on the exercise, it was what he was enjoying watching.
Absolutely, because you can generally, I mean, I know when I have some of my clients and I've seen them come on to do their cardiovascular work in the gym, and I've seen them, the two of them have just jumped on a treadmill next to each other, and before you know it, they said, I can't believe my 40 minutes is up.
So
it always helps. I mean, if you can distract yourself and put yourself into something that you are enjoying, like a good DVD or a movie or something that you want to watch, before you know it, you think, wow, it's been 45 minutes that I've been on here. No wonder that my carpet looks like it's soaked in sweat.
Hey, that's great. Thanks, David. Talk to you next week.
My pleasure.
Thanks, David. And, of course, for more details, jump onto mindfood.com. I've got to change the way I think about going to the gym.
Well, I think if you started going to the gym.
Thank you for joining us today here on Mind Food Radio Smart Thinking. Now, if you missed any of today's program, jump online to mindfood.com and you can download the entire program by going to the radio page. Or if you just wanted to hear a particular interview, that'll be sitting there on the radio tab in the podcast page. And while you're there, have a look around as well and go into the draw to win some fabulous prizes exclusive to mindfood.com. Well, that's the end of our health show today, but next week we thought we'd get all our foodies together. So join us next week here on Mind Food Radio Smart Thinking as we talk to Nigella Lawson, Australia's Queen of the Kitchen. Margaret Fulton's going to join us as well. We'll be chatting with Michelle, our food director, McHugh, all about those beautiful winter roasts. And of course, Lindy Milan will join us as well right here on Mind Food Radio. Have a good week.
Mind Food Radio Smart Thinking was produced in the studio of Radio Australasia. Produced by Ben Starr and Brian Newington and Patrick Kayrouse. Bogart Torelli speaking.